Blog Talk Radio.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. This is a show where we try to think for ourselves and offer thought-provoking, stimulating, informative, and entertaining discussion. Welcome.
Welcome. I thought if I did a direct connect in that it would start my show, but I had to call in after the show started, and it told me to start my show. This is Dave. I'll be in for G-Ski, and we got a great show for you, and I think I really mean it this time. So, yeah, I just want to welcome you. Our show is Renaissance Radio with Dave and G-Ski Rocks. The network is Airwaves America. If you want to get in touch with us, like Sue from New Mexico, hi, Sue. The call-in number is 516-387-1705. Something I forgot to do last time I was doing the intro stuff. Phone number 516-387-1705. Come on and call in. It'll prompt you if you want to add to the discussion. If you got something to call me out on or whatever it is, then push one, and there'll be a little indicator here, and I can bring you in. I just want to thank Sue for promoting the show. I retweeted a couple of her tweets that promoted it. So hopefully we'll get some visitors tonight. We'll get some traffic. I got a great show for you. I got a great show for you, and I really mean it. And now I have to tell you why I'm laughing. That's something that I always used to laugh. I'm going to bring you in on some inside baseball. G-Ski, maybe he'll hear this or maybe he won't. But usually when he says, we got a great show for you, he has no idea what it's going to be. He has no idea what the show is going to be. But you got to give it to him because he has faith that it's going to be a great show. So I started laughing at that, you know, because we have this time around, because we were together, you know, 6-7 years ago, we were together doing radio together, and we spent some time doing show prep. Well, I spent some time doing show prep. I still think he kind of just did it off the cuff, which I was pretty envious of. But G-Ski, he had something he had to deal with tonight. I think he had a death in the family, an uncle or something. So he had to just take tonight off and deal with that. There's things you got to do. There's people you got to see. There's grieving to take place. So he'd be in no condition anyways to be here. I'll do a shout out to him a little bit later on as well. But yeah, got a great show. A couple more things. If you want to get in touch with either myself or G-Ski, you can get in touch with G-Ski he's got an email address, gskirocks@airwavesamerica.com. Airwavesamerica.com. That's the network. And as I've said before, apparently you can get in touch with me by sending an email to dave@airwavesamerica.com. Now, I won't get it because I have yet to access that account. But if you can send one there. Maybe the best way to get in touch with me, I'm AntiKami on Twitter, although I haven't spent much time at all on Twitter for the past 6 years or so. AntiKami, that's with a K, AntiKomie. But I do get email notifications when somebody has mentioned me in a tweet. So I'll get the email that says, you know, 784 people have mentioned you on Twitter. So it's been a little while since I've been on there. But like I said, I opened up some app on my phone, Tweetcaster or something. We used to use TweetDeck, but since I rebooted my computer, I don't have TweetDeck. But we had everything all laid out. We would cut and paste, you know, hashtags and those types of things onto our tweets to promote them and get them out there. It used to work pretty good. We used to get we had quite a following, a little community on Blog Talk Radio, but. And it was fun. It was fun, you know, while it lasted. And then, you know, inevitably life must intrude. So that was one of the things, that was one of the reasons I had to bow out. G-Ski got sick. He had to bow out. But a little while ago, a few months ago, he sent me a text because we used to always keep in touch. Sometimes it'd be, you know, 6 months. And none of us have heard from the other, so we'd shoot a text, say, "Hey, homie, what's going on?" Well, he shot me a text out of the blue, and said he's going to be putting the radio show back together and is inviting me back in with him. So I said, "Well, let me know." As I started to indicate before, the only thing that's different is I don't really have time to do a lot of show prep. I have an idea, and I, you know, I'll talk about it. Now I will extract every bit of useful information from the research I've done on whatever the topic is, and that's how we go. That's how we do what we do, and. Crack-a-lackin'. We got Bigfoot just joined in. Thanks, you. Welcome, Bigfoot. I've been following with... by the way, let me finish up the housekeeping stuff. The call-in number, 516-387-1705. Let's see if I can't get some kind of a jingle. 516-387-1705. I'll work on it. In any case, that's one of the ways you can talk with us right now. Me anyways. Like I said, G-Ski's out. But I'm on Facebook, Dave Graham. I live in New Hampshire. I've got a band site, a band page on there for Dave Graham Live. I got a couple of weeks. I got another gig coming up, matter of fact, I DJ weddings once in a while. I got a wedding coming up in like 2 weeks, gig coming up in 3, and then I have kind of another gig, but it's me providing sound system for services for a death that I had in my family a little while ago. I told you guys about it, my cousin. So, if you want to get a hold of G-Ski on Facebook, you have to spell it G-E-E-S-K-I, rocks. G-Ski rocks. So, anyways. Like I've been saying, we got a great, great show for you. Hopefully I got some ideas. Maybe I will... stimulate somebody to call in and call me on it and see if we can get some discussion going. As you know, the last few weeks there's been activity and action in the Arizona forensic. So I've got some interesting information. As of last week, I read a letter that they wrote to the supervisors of the county, of Maricopa County. And they invited all of the supervisors to their house for cake and tea and cookies. And they were going to have some discussions and try to get some questions answered regarding chain of custody, deleted data banks, stuff like that. Well, the county supervisors, as it turns out, shined them on. They didn't show up. Nobody showed up to answer any questions. What I did notice was a few references in the mainstream media where they were cracking on the cyber ninjas or whoever's conducting the audit down there. When they said, "Oh, there was a deleted thing," "Oh, no, we recovered the information." They were saying, "Oh, I guess they just didn't look in the right place. That shows how smart those guys are." And they're mocking, you know, Rachel Maddow was mocking and stuff like that. And so they were trying to make it sound like the drive really wasn't deleted. They just weren't looking in the right spot. But when you hear the testimony of one of the auditors, what they said was they were able to recover deleted data. So that means it was deleted. Hello. It was deleted. It had been deleted, but they recovered it. That's how it was phrased. I may or may not have some audio to that effect, but there's people covering it on like TikTok, and I haven't seen a whole lot of that stuff on Facebook. Probably the algorithm is set to shut down everything on the audits. So Arizona is now not the only state conducting audits. It looks like I'm pretty sure it's Michigan. Pennsylvania is I think get an audit underway. My state here in New Hampshire, Windham, New Hampshire, they're conducting an audit. Now these audits, they're hard to get information about. Because it doesn't hit top of the hour news. This is the kind of thing that they are keeping a lid on as much as possible because of what they're going to find. They know what they know is going to be found. I ran across, and I'm going to play this one for you in a minute, Dinesh D'Souza having a discussion with the Senate president who wrote that letter last week, and he's asking the obvious about what does it mean? What does it look like? If you uncover information that you know is there and it's uncovered in a way that is 100% irrefutable and credible, does that mean those electors would now tip toward Trump? So she kind of sidestepped the question because there is no precedence for any of this. There's no way to see what it looks like if they say, "Well, guess what we finally found? We found all this smoking gun stuff. You guys tried to change the laws, and now it's just going to be that much harder to get to correct it, because you got a guy who's sworn in and, you know, inaugurated. Even though he insults people at the Coast Guard, that doesn't matter. He calls them, they're a dull class. No, bonehead, you blew the joke. It was he plagiarized a Reagan joke, and he tried to plagiarize a Reagan joke doing the commencement at the Coast Guard, and he was trying to get an applause line, but he left out a couple of key words and wanted them to applaud for him anyways, almost to the degree that he said so. I mean, he all but came out and said, you should have applauded for me anyways. He says, you're a dull class. You know, I give you a line that talks about the Navy that way. You should definitely applaud that. Okay, but you blew the line. Yeah. Anyways, let me see if I can find this Dinesh D'Souza. And my apologies if it comes out too loud. Let me know.
Let me follow a thought experiment, Kelly. Let's just say that the Arizona audit reveals that Maricopa County, which is the county that delivered the state for Biden, tips to Trump, or subtracts enough invalid votes that Trump wins the state of Arizona. What happens? Does Arizona then declare that Trump is the winner? What? Follow the process out. What happens if the audit reveals that Trump won Arizona?
Right. And remember, in Arizona, the margin is razor thin, 0.3%, just a little over 10,000 votes separating those two candidates. So the likelihood of finding something is very, very high. And I think that's why the Democrats are panicking, why they're in a frenzy. So these are unprecedented times, but they're going to call for unprecedented solutions, in my opinion. One potential is for the Republican Party of Arizona, because our electors will have been disenfranchised.
Let me follow a thought.
Their electors will have been disenfranchised. So he admits that it's unprecedented to the degree that he really doesn't know what it would look like or how to proceed, or, you know, who would know how to proceed in a case like this? You know, I can't figure it out. I can't say how, you know, what it should look like. I don't know, you know, whose purview it is to take the next step. I don't know to whom you would take the next step. Because, you know, it's like I have been saying, when some of my friends would say, you know, yeah, it's going down, there's going to be people going to jail, and I would just nod and I would say, okay, I hope so. Who are you going to get to prosecute? Silence. Who, before which judge would you bring the case? Silence. And even if you did get a judge to hear the case and even rule on the case, it would get appealed to a higher court that is corrupt. Because, I mean, where are you going to take it? To the Supreme Court? They're so scared of their the thing is, they're so scared because of Chuck Schumer. He will bring a whirlwind. If you maintain these terrible decisions, he doesn't even know what they're talking about. But it was enough. The threat was enough to cow these Supreme Court justices. So nobody's, you know, well, a few of them, most of them, John Roberts mostly, because he's the one that decides what gets listened to or not, for the most part. He's the one that steers that whole ship. But if somebody, I think they should fight back, the Supreme Court. I think they should fight back one way or another against, you know, the Democrats and Chuck Schumer and stuff like that. if they don't, because they need to maintain their independence. They need to maintain the co-part of the co-equal branch of government. But, you know, now everything is up to who? Chuck Schumer in the Senate? He's one half of one third of the government. He's the leader. And he's only the leader because the vice president breaks ties. I laugh when I hear him say Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. It's a 50-50 Senate. And, you know, I guess it's possible that Kamala Harris would break the tie towards the Republicans, right? So, yeah, all right, never mind. So, that's what's going on with that. They really don't know what it's going to look like, what will happen, and what it will do. But like I said, mainstream. In the mainstream media, they're already mocking the whole thing. I heard a clip of Anderson Cooper asking somebody about, you know, how would we know if the cyber ninjas found something that supported their assertion that, you know, there was voter fraud or vote tampering or this and that? How would we know that what they say is true? So in other words, he's trying to just cast doubt on anything they end up with, you know, and what they come out with. So it's, you know, it started. I don't know how successful it'll be. It's going to be pretty successful, their campaign, because they're following the rules for radicals, which we should visit pretty soon. If I don't visit it this week, I'll visit it next week, and I came across Rules for Revolution. I found that in one of the chapters of my second book. The second book is Reality is Not Optional. I had forgotten about it. You know, I just started reading it. I'm like, man, you're smart. So yeah, that's what's going on from the election, the forensic audit in Arizona, and like I said, Georgia has already done their law changes for voting laws. Now they're Jim Crow laws, is what they call them. So. They're not nearly as bad as some of the other states that haven't been corrupted, and they're not that bad, but yeah. So the whole discredit technique and casting doubt and mocking and all that's in the rules for radicals, and as a matter of fact. I got a little story about a postal customer that I talked to yesterday, and she's not getting her mail. She's lived there for a month, and the forward hasn't gotten through, and she's waiting for a specific item. And I, you know, I just look and I'm like, yeah, that's not in my area. When I get it, you get it. You know, if it doesn't get to me, I can't really do much about it. You can call up the postmaster and have them call the post office where you came from and, you know, have them light a fire. So anyway, so the discussion from that went to something along the lines of, well, because I know all the cuts that Trump made to you guys, so it might be difficult getting that. And then she walked off. And I'm thinking, I was in my truck, sorting some packages for the next for the second half of the route, so I don't have to keep opening the back of that truck. And I was thinking about that. I'm like, he didn't make any cuts to the thing. Well, then she came walking back and asked me, hey, can I give this to you? That'll save me a trip to the post office. I was like, absolutely. I'll take any outgoing. But I'd like to ask you a question. Not as a condition of taking this. I'll take this, but if you wouldn't mind, just out of curiosity, what cuts are you referring to that Trump made? Oh, I just heard that he made deep cuts to the post office, and I said, not that I'm aware of. nothing really changed. There was a media narrative that said, because of the mail-in ballots in the election, that he was making cuts to make it, slow the roll of the mail-in ballots or something like that. But I said he never did that. Then she goes, oh, so that was fake news? And I said, yeah. I said most of the news about him was fake. She goes, well, I just didn't like the way I didn't agree with his policies. I said, because now I'm kind of in a defensive mode, not that I'm a wacko Trumper. I mean, he was a human person and he had, he did a lot of good things, but, a couple of things you can't say I agree with every single thing, And I said, if you actually looked at the policy and ignored what people said about the policy or reported about the policy, you might not think that the way you do. And she goes, yeah, okay. Well, I just, then she goes on to the tweeting and the attacking people. And I said, again, those attacks, what's reported as attacks is a defensive thing, because if people are out there and they're just absolutely blatantly making things up, should a person not defend themselves? If they have no other way to reach people, they need to defend themselves. I said, do you still think that Trump colluded with Russia to steal the 2016 election? And she kind of nodded, yeah. And I said, that whole thing was made up completely from the get-go. But it wasn't reported that it was made up. Huh. Well, she says, I don't watch any of the news. And this is kind of the point that I'm getting to on why the discredit campaign might be kind of effective. She goes, well, I don't really watch any of the news. I'm kind of, that's kind of burnt out on that. I probably listen to National Public Radio for about 15 minutes just to get a sense of, what's going on. And of course, I'm secretly rolling my eyeballs so loud you can hear them, because that's government radio right there. So I said, okay, well, here's something that's interesting to me, I said. You don't watch any of the mainstream news. You don't keep up with the news. You do 15 minutes a day of NPR, and you took away that Trump made cuts to the post office. And she goes, yeah. I said, he didn't. I'm surprised. I mean, the mainstream media had a campaign, a narrative that was, he's making cuts to the post office. NPR, I'm sure they hit it as well, but they never correct it. Or if they correct it, it's one of those, last minute, it's at the end of the show or whatever, 10 seconds. So what I'm saying is even the slightest exposure to any narrative-type media, any gaslight-type media, will leave you with the impression that, for example, Trump colluded with Russia, or Trump defunded the post office, or, whatever the rest of them are, And they're just things that they make it up, and I bet we can sell this, and then they run with it. So
I don't know if I have any others here for Let me just see.
Here's another, might be like from OAN News, about the Maricopa County thing. Let's just listen.
Well, the CEO of Cyber Ninjas doubled down on his findings that the ballot count on record in Maricopa County does not match the physical count of the ballots. He then took it one step further. Doug Logan, whose company works with some of the largest names in the financial services sector, the government sector, and also evaluated the systems in Antrim County, made the comments during the state Senate hearing. He said that the Maricopa Board of Supervisors were incorrect in their assertion that his company misread the early voting transmittal sheets and didn't account for the duplicate ballot, which is why they say the totals are different. Logan, however, said those duplicate ballots were taken into account, and it's the batches of ballots that do not have duplicates on record that are, in fact, not matching up.
There's actually a bottom part of the sheet right here where if anything is sent over to duplication, it's supposed to be filled out. If you take a look at the sheet, you'll notice that there's nothing down here. They said there was a thing.
Well, the CEO of Cyber Ninjas doubled down on his findings that the...
So they're pulling out all the stops and trying to discredit everything, and it's not working. So the other thing that I found out with the ballots now, some of the ballots that were coming through not even creased. That's an obvious, you know. That's an obvious question mark. And what was going on, I think it was in New Hampshire, they had issues with the creases where the crease happened across a certain person's name. And I just don't remember whose name it was. And it threw off the ballot because of the crease. So they have to go back. They have to go back through all of those and try to figure out, by eye, which block was checked, because it happened to be right on one of the creases in the ballot that was mailed in. So that's kind of the opposite situation of not having any creases on ballots. Want to welcome Purple Pill. Thanks for coming in and checking us out. I'm Dave. G-Ski's off tonight, and we're just kind of hitting some Maricopa County stuff and election audits going on. So that's where I'm at. So I'm gonna take a quick little break and a quick break as soon as I find out where the thing was. We'll do this one right here. Boom. Be right back.
No one knows how to best cope with kidney disease like someone who lives with it every day. And that's why the National Kidney Foundation created NKS Peers, our peer mentoring program for kidney patients, including people on dialysis, transplant recipients, and those in earlier stages of kidney disease. Our program also connects living kidney donors with people who are considering donation. NKF trains kidney patients and living donors to serve as mentors in the program, and then we connect them with others who are seeking support. For someone who is just diagnosed with kidney disease or someone considering donating a kidney, talking it through with someone who's been through it is invaluable. Participants use a special toll-free phone system to connect to each other, so no one has to disclose their personal phone numbers or incur any long-distance charges, and the program is completely free. It provides effective, confidential help to those who need it. To learn more or to get involved, call 855-653-7337, that's 855-NKF-PEER, or email us at nkfpeers@kidney.org.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and G.C. Rock.
I am Conor McGregor, multiple weight MMA champion. I'm a fighter and I've been through many battles in the octagon. Many consider my fights in the octagon heroic, but the real life heroes are those men and women who fight to protect us every day. The real life fighters, the real life heroes, are the firefighters and police officers. These first responders are true heroes, because these brave men and women put themselves in the line of danger every single day, protecting us all. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation ensures that first responders from fire, EMS and police departments who are killed in the line of duty with young children have a home without the burden of a mortgage. They are my heroes. They need our help today. I'd like to ask you to join me in donating $11 a month to support their efforts. Your $11 a month honors and supports our first responders. Please call now at 1-844-BRAVEST or visit tunneltotowers.org.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
Hey, welcome back. Thanks for sticking around. Got Dave right here. G-Ski's out tonight. He's got a family thing he had to deal with. He's okay. But just let me explain. We play the Kidney Foundation PSAs. G-Ski's got stage 5 kidney failure and spends much of his time on a dialysis machine. And often it's how he spends the radio program hooked up to that machine, getting his blood washed. So that's why we're kind of with him on that. So I think I've wrapped up and extracted about as much as I can that I know of for the Arizona audit, and I'm playing around with. I mean, it's not enough to just bitch about stuff. You know what I mean? You gotta think, and you gotta figure things out. You gotta think for yourself, and Far away. Isn't that where Shrek, that's where Shrek went. He had to go to far, far away. Thank you for that, Purple Pill. I typed in, where are you calling from? Because he said, good morning. But anyways, it's not enough to just bitch about the state of affairs that we're in. And I think, you know, like I wrote 2 books, and, you know, it's each of them had, you know, there was definitely plenty of bitching in the books, but there was also some ideas, some solutions, and things like that. So I've been kind of coming up with and noodling with some kind of a think for yourself series, a way to get someone to ask questions about what they believe. So I got a friend at work who argues whenever something in the office comes up, he argues narrative talking points. And not only is the arrogant ignorance that he displays embarrassing, but it's also kind of insulting. Because every time He argues something that came from, you know, whatever the mainstream narrative is, I tear it apart in, you know, 2 or 3 different ways, and he shuts up. So the only reason I'm able to do that is because I've put a little bit of thought into these things. I've done a little bit of research, and, you know, there was at one point he asked me, has there ever been a Democrat that you lended any credibility to, or any, you know, that you ever believed at all? And I said, no, not since I learned about the Frankfurt School, not since I learned about Cloud and Piven, not since I learned about Saul Alinsky, not since I learned about, I think I named 2 or 3 others, and then he shut up. Not since I did the work, you know, but he'll still argue these narratives, the media narrative talking points. So I've come up with a couple of things that, if, you know, just to try and help anybody else out there that thinks that this is useful information, or useful ideas. Let's put it that way. And by the way, if anybody has any questions that illustrate a good point, type it in the chat. Give me a call, and we'll talk about it. I started doing this either last week or the week before. I don't remember. But one of the things that I started doing was, okay, the way you think for yourself is you need to ask yourself a few questions. And if you're going to be sympathetic to people who are underserved or they're minorities or they're put upon or they have an uphill struggle and things like that. First of all, are the grievances presented by somebody in that group? Are the grievances presented by somebody who is struggling? Is it grievances presented by someone in that group? Do they check all the boxes? Or is it something that is in the narrative that is complained about on behalf of another group? That's usually so Purple Pill asked in the chat, did someone put research into the kidney dialysis thing too? If you're talking about the promo, no, we just went to the ad council and downloaded a couple of things, or we uploaded them into our set. As far as the G-Ski's actual situation, there was deep research done into his situation, which is what he's doing. So not sure which way you're asking on that one. In any case, the grievances that are, if they're presented by somebody on the news on behalf of a certain group, that means they're just trying to agitate you and trying to steer you and control you into submission, basically, to believing that, you know, everybody in that group has a grievance, has the exact same grievance. So no one is really a minority. That's true. That's true. I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at. No one is really, they just, many believe they are. That's true, because they're always continually told that they are by the narrative. You know, I want to use the right language to expose what's going on. It's the narrative that keeps people believing they're in the minority. You talk to a person who happens to be in the quote-unquote the group that should have the grievance, they're all right. I bet they don't have the grievance. If they're not already an agitator out on the streets with a megaphone, they're probably fine, and they probably just as angry at the other people as you. But, you know, so that's just one way to try to get people to ask themselves a question so that they can start thinking for themselves. Another thing is you can ask straight up, which would you rather be treated by society as, an individual or stereotyped as part of a group that happens to have these grievances? You know, that's a valid question right there, because as soon as you include the word stereotyped, because that's what it is when you have a minority group, that's because you stereotyped a bunch of people into that. So yeah, that's true. The practitioners, they practice, but they don't really have a clue. Doctors are practitioners. Ha. Yeah. In any case, that's the question. What would you rather be treated as? That's a think for yourself type of a question, right? I would rather be treated as an individual with my own problems, grievances, successes, whatever. Take it as it comes. This is me. I'm not part of that group that is aggrieved. You know, I'm just not part of that. Hopefully, people that you would debate with would also rather be treated as an individual rather than stereotyped in a group. All right, so what's another one? When you hear those talking points on TV, when you hear those montages where all those different news outlets have exactly the same word that they use, you know, first of all, those words have been washed through a focus group. They've been tested. They have been tweaked to extract the highest emotional word picture from anybody who doesn't give it any thought. So you ask yourself, when you hear a talking point, you ask what it means. You can ask somebody that you're debating with, or you can ask them to ask what it means. Ask themselves, what does it mean? So in other words, you get a talking point, you get a word picture, you feel a certain way, you have a certain picture in your head. What does that picture look like? And it's valuable to cause somebody to identify what a phrase means, what a certain phrase, any phrase. I don't, you know, millionaire. Remember back in the Obama years, he was going, millionaires and billionaires. Well, what does that mean? Who are you talking about? Who would be in that category? Well, millionaires and billionaires. No. Let's pick some names. Who do you put in that category? And why, but you might know some people that are millionaires, billionaires, you say, oh, okay, but not them. You know what I mean? So you have to ask these questions like, okay, what does that talking point mean? What does it look like? Or, okay, walk me through it. Walk me through it. How does it work? You know, you have corporate jet owners. That was another thing that was back in the day. Corporate jet owners, meaning rich folk. Well, they affected with just that phrase. They affected a whole lot of the jet making industry. You know, there's people didn't want to be shamed, so they did not. Did not buy a jet or whatever. Anyways, so there's a couple of things that you can ask somebody to kind of nudge them into the whole thinking for yourself. You know, I've said many times, I do not require you to believe everything that I believe, but you will bloody well think for yourself. So if you're just going to come at me with narrative talking points, I'm going to bat them down just like I always have, because I know what they are and I know where they're coming from. And I know the difference. I've done the thinking. I've thought about it. I've researched it and written about it. I posted a little while ago, moving on to the next one. I posted on Facebook a little while ago that was somebody, it was a TikTok of somebody saying that one of the biggest lies that has been perpetrated by just about everybody in media, in academia, and in government, you hear the word all the time, that this nation is a democracy. They refer to it as a democracy. Our democracy deserves this. Our democracy will fall apart. That will ruin our democracy. Well, you can't have a democracy if you don't do this. It's a democracy. It's a democracy this. It's a democracy. It's a democracy. It's a it's not a democracy. We live in a constitutional republic. We have democratically elected representatives and also senators, as it turns out. But I'll get to that in a minute. So it's not a democracy. So anyways, yeah, I posted that on Facebook. And one of my not friends anymore responded with the trolling emojis of laugh until tears come out of your head. Ha, 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 ha. So you would rather be led by a minority? And I deleted the comment. It's really not worth it. You know, if I responded to that, I would have said, if you were smarter, you'd realize how dumb you are. But you're not. You know, you're the living embodiment of the Dunning-Kruger effect study. And when you figure out what that is, you might be insulted. Because I didn't bother getting into, are you comfortable with any group voting on your natural rights? Because 50% plus one person could vote on natural rights, a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, other AKA property. They can vote, and it is legal if they vote to take away people's property. Well, is that not a natural right? They've already been voting on taking property away. But what I'm saying is it would really get down and dirty. It would get down. Right now, if they did, they don't. But if they had a majority and it was a democracy, what they would do is vote to take away all the property from Republicans. That's the way it would go right now. And they'd be fine with it. Ha, 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 ha. We have a democracy. Well, good for you. It's not always going to be that way. And I know that you don't have a majority of people that would do that. Just talk about any rights. If it's voted on, if you're in a democracy and it's voted on, whatever it is, it's legal. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it correct. It doesn't make it fun. It doesn't make it warm and fuzzy. It makes it legal to take natural rights from whomever is voted against. That's what a democracy can do. So you have to ask someone, if they're talking about a democracy, are you comfortable with people voting on your natural rights? And you can get into it with them. You know, what do you feel are your natural rights, if you have any? What are you thinking? It's just a thought, you know. It's a thought exercise for somebody to realize democracy isn't good. Anyways, So Purple Pill just said democracy equals lynch mob. Yes, that's pretty much what it is. Totally agree with that. Democracy is two wolves and a sheep discussing what's for dinner. Whereas a republic, on the other hand, is two wolves and a well-armed sheep discussing the same thing. That's a fun one. So in any case, you can also get into That was one of the things that I, with that lady that was talking to me about Trump defunding the post office. She said something, you know, well, I just think there's way too much money in politics. And I was like, on that, we agree. On that, we agree. Here's what I think. And this is a fantastic way to get into the topic of the Convention of States, because that's the only way you will get into have access to repealing, for instance, the 17th Amendment to the Constitution. The 17th Amendment was back in 1913. That's when they changed to directly elect senators. And I've discussed this before. It's a way that would kind of start putting Washington back in the box if they repealed that, because what would happen then is your state legislatures would appoint a senator and send that person to Washington for 6 years, and they could appoint them as many times as they wanted. If they started flaking out, the state legislature could say, excuse me, we need to take a vote on such and such a senator. We're going to recall. We're doing a recall vote. So in other words, the senator had to be accountable to the state legislature from which they were being represented. So it's kind of interesting that now the people elect senators. The senators are really not accountable to anybody. After 6 years, they're able to amass enough money to do what it's a formula. I know it's a formula. I don't know what it is, but they do. And the formula is, to get elected, you need to do this, this, and this. And that's all they do. They spend three of their 6 years on campaigning. Or two of their 6 years, you know, on campaigning. So if they want to do something that's whacked out, they just do it in the first year. And by, you know, after that, people will forget. And then they'll be able to get reelected. People have been there for, you know, 40, 50, 60 years in the Senate. That's too much. The other thing is, the state legislatures have zero representation in D.C., They don't really have a way to hold that senator accountable. Whereas if they were the ones that appointed that senator, if they didn't like what he was doing or she was doing, they would just recall, take a vote, recall. Take a vote, appoint someone else who would represent their state government, their state legislature better. And it's a pretty cool thing when you think about it, because right now, and I got here by getting money in money out of politics. Here's where that comes in. Right now, if a big business company wanted to lobby the national government, they have to pay one guy to go to one town. Because in that one town, Washington, D.C., are all of the people you need to access to lobby to get what you need for your company. So in other words, the company that's sending a lobbyist they're doing what the state legislatures used to do. They need to send one lobbyist to one town because they have access to all of the senators who basically do whatever they want to stay in power. Whereas if you repeal the 17th Amendment, that same company, in order to lobby governments on a national level, would have to dispatch 57 states, right? But they would have to dispatch 50 to lobby each state legislature, because if they lobbied the senator into doing something that didn't represent what the state legislatures wanted, the state legislatures would pull that senator, and then that lobbyist in Washington would have to start all over again. So that would remove the good old boy type of thing that's going on right now. You would see different faces in there. You would see different. You would see probably more of a turnover, and that would give state legislatures their power back. You know, right now they hardly have any power at all, other than in their own state. They don't have any representation at the national level. So anyway, those are some thoughts I have. I'm open for suggestions. Phone lines are always open. Anybody wants to call in, the number is 516-387-1705. I'm going to take a top of the hour break. We'll be back with some other stuff. All right, here we go.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
I love life. I love life because there's a challenge and something new every day. I was told when I was getting married that I had this kidney disease, and my three sisters had it, and two of my brothers had it as well. It slows the kidneys down till they stop working. I tell myself that this can be rough and hard, but you can live, and you can be happy. I go to dialysis 3 times a week. I spend 4 hours in the center. It's good to go to dialysis and see somebody care about you. I'm a social worker by profession. I like being around people. It is important to listen to your technicians and your doctors, your nephrologists and dietitians. If you don't talk to them, they don't know you feeling bad or feeling sick. By working together, you'll feel better. I got my husband, I got my family, I got my job. I visit different places doing health and wellness like hospitals, dialysis centers, clinics, and do workshops concerning prevention for kidney failure. Dialysis affects people in different ways. Find out how it affects you so you can be able to beat it to the punch, so you'll be able to be active and do things that you want to do. Be educated about what's going on with you and your body. I try to enjoy life more than what I have before. I have kidney failure, and I'm living well.
When we do Internet Talk Radio, we receive support from a great many areas. We have listener support, of course, and some who help with the promoting. One group that often goes unrecognized are the wives of Internet Talk Radio hosts. They are the ones who tolerate our dalliances and the time we invest in our hobbies. Well, this is one way we can properly recognize those who are closest to us by broadcasting their sincere sentiments regarding our passions.
Are you going to stay up all night? You have family, you know. You're always at that computer. How much money do you make with that dumbass radio show? You're not the only one that lives there, you know. You better come and eat. I'm not bringing it in there.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. A teenager. Learning the lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, welcome back. This is Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. G-Ski's off tonight. He's dealing with a family thing, and so I'm filling in. And I got a great show for you. If you want to call in, I recommend it. 516-387-1705. If you've got something to add, if you want to comment, if you want to... if you want to just check in with us, I want to thank Purple Pill for hanging out with us for a little while. Bigfoot, of course, and he just came back. All right, cool. Thanks, Purple Pill. In any case, like I said, give us a call, 516-387-1705, and show us how smart you are.
Let's do it.
Well, this hour... I discovered something else in one of my my second book, and I'm gonna kind of riff off of it today, because you're gonna see how many different things that is being used. Every tactic can be identified if you know where to look. You can look at some from Rules for Radicals. You can look at some from the what did we cover? We covered the critical theory aspect of it. Well, in my book, I found a list, another list of rules, and this is Rules for Revolution. And I'm trying to look at how I set this up. I was like I said, there was plenty of bitching in my books, and I was bitching about Obama. I was talking about how Obama at the time was basically he's an agitator. He says, "Well, I'm a community organizer." Well, that means agitator. And agitation is so natural, and it was like second nature to him. He doesn't really even seem to be aware that when or what he's saying and doing is agitating. You know, if he mentions, the rich or millionaires and billionaires or things like that, he's agitating. He's calling attention in a negative fashion to a group. He's lasing the target, as in, how guided missiles find their target. Obama is identifying targets for the weak-minded to rally against and try to move public opinion. Very good, Purple Pill. It was the over-the-shoulder, what was it called? The let us not forget the very first radical. We give an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical who fought back against the system to the degree that he won his own kingdom. And then he says, Lucifer. Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Obama, though, he's well-versed and well-aware of the next set of rules, Rules for Revolution. The quote, the communist / socialist rules for revolution. You're going to love these. I added some kind of a historical note. It is our understanding that an earlier version of this frightening document was first in Dusseldorf, Germany, in the early part of the year 1919. It was exposed later in that year in the Bartlesville Examiner Enterprise in the state of Oklahoma in the USA. It is also our understanding that in 1946, the Attorney General of Florida obtained a copy of a later version of the document from a member of the American Communist Party. We have also been informed that a more current version appeared in the Los Angeles Times on November 9, 1998. It has since been brought to light by other concerned citizens across America. It also now periodically makes the rounds on the Internet. Well, that must be where I picked it up. Rules for revolution. Number one, corrupt the young. Intensify their exposure to violence, sex, and drugs, and draw them away from religion. Support a greater development of all of their superficiality. Corrupting the young. Number two, infiltrate the educational system. Oh, by the way, let's put a big check in the box of the first one, and let's put a big check in the box of the second one. It says, become deeply involved with the educational system of the nation. It must always be remembered that one of the first things that must be done in order to take and retain control is to subvert and dominate the minds of the youth of the nation. Check. Can you say critical race theory? Number three, what is this? Number three, one, two, three. Number three, get control of public communication. Infiltrate the schools of journalism. Move into the areas of management of the metropolitan newspapers and the broadcast networks. Infiltrate the motion picture industry. Check, check, and check. So then number four is divide and conquer. Press for even greater divisions of the people into hostile groups. Divide them by race, nationality, sex, religion, age, financial position, culture, or anything else that can be used to create serious fractures within the social order. Check. If Jiski was here, I would ask him if he minded if I read that one again. Divide and conquer. Oh, by the way, he would say, by all means. By divide and conquer, they mean press for even greater divisions of the people into hostile groups. That is exactly what is going on right now. Divide them by race. Ha 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 ha. Nationality. Ha ha ha. Sex and religion. Age. These kids today, huh? Financial position. Millionaires and billionaires. And culture. Or anything else that can be used to create serious fractures within the social order. In other words, they mean with this one bullet point right here, they mean to tear down the civil society. What was that? Four? I'll find out. Yeah, that's four. So number five is destroy religion. They say, do all that can be done to remove religion from all public areas. Isolate all that remains and promote any competing alternatives that can be used to eliminate whatever is left. Are these not interesting? So happy I found this and I put it in my second book. Let me see. I'm going to keep going here. Use language as a weapon. Use language as a weapon. Now, is it me, or does language keep getting redefined? I think it is. So here's how they're going to do it. They say, speak of supporting democracy in the name of liberalism, and stand up for what you claim as good values, but use every method possible to pervert, destroy, or take them over. Create the new order in their names. Since communism and socialism are not always labels that are appreciated as are other terms. I mean, the whole critical theory, these kind of go along the same, they follow the same track as the critical theory bullet points. I'm going to read it again. Using language as a weapon. Speak of supporting democracy. Well, I just talked about that. Democracy in the name of liberalism. Stand up for what you claim as good values, but use every method possible to pervert, destroy, or take them over. Create the new order in their names, since communism and socialism are not always labels that are appreciated, as are other terms. That's using language as a weapon. I'd say they're doing that pretty freaking well. Number six. Use the gullible and idealistic. They are practically begging to be exploited in the name of whatever they feel emotionally attached to. To better use them for your purposes. That was kind of muddled. I'm going to read it again. Use the gullible and idealistic. They are practically begging to be exploited in the name of whatever they feel emotionally attached to. Use what they think they believe to better use them for your purposes. This is just evil. This is like... Oh, wait a minute. Susie. Wait till you hear this one. Incite civil disobedience. That's one of these bullet points. Create labor unrest and strikes whenever possible. Promote mob demonstrations and demands for everything that will undermine the national stability. Well, they've done plenty of that. Destroy human values is the next one. I don't even know what number I'm on. I didn't number them in the book, so sorry. Destroy human values. Do all that you can to undermine the old moral values. Recognize personal discipline and integrity as conditions that must be eradicated. Recognize personal discipline and integrity as conditions that must be eradicated. That's why nobody can find somebody to work. That's why people, I mean, they are destroying personal discipline. People need to get up and go to work. People need to get up and go to work. But why should they when they're getting money in any case? I remember Rush Limbaugh years ago made the comment of people are not working, but they're also not hungry. That's bad. He said something like that. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was to the effect of, you know, just... they're not working, they're not earning any money, but they're still eating. So that's because of the government. And unfortunately, they think that that's a good thing. It is not a good thing unless all you really want to do is stay in power. The next one is to command the political arena. They say, get into American politics and identify those who can be used and those who must be eliminated. Stop those who fight against the communist and socialist agenda with everything from character assassination to any other creative fictions that can be deployed to put doubt in the minds of the voters. There it is. G-Ski, do you mind if I read that one again? Command the political arena. Get into American politics and identify those who can be used and those who must be eliminated. Stop those who fight against the communist and socialist agenda with everything from character assassination to any other creative fictions that can be deployed to put doubt in the minds of the voters. That's what they did for the last 5 years. That's what they've done. 6 years now, probably. This next one is one of the last ones, and it's kind of scary. It's frightening. Apply the art of gradual reduction. Institute all the changes necessary to reduce the freedoms and rights of the people. Sudden removal is almost never possible. Gradual removal over extended periods of time can almost always be counted on to be successful. Ding, 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 ding. That's what they're doing. Wow, I haven't read those rules in probably 5 years. I forgot about them. I stumbled across them today. I was looking through the different chapters in the book, and, oh, man, tell you what. If anybody else wants to get this book, you can get it on, this is in Chapter 5, The Race Wars. You can get it at lulu.com. The title of this book is called Reality is Not Optional. Another book you can get that I wrote is called Stay Mad. That was my first book. I'm going to be diving into that one in just a little bit. And I got some cool things in there that I wrote. And I said, hey, you're pretty smart. So in any case, those are the rules for revolution. So if you got a comment, please feel free to give us a call, 516-387-1705. Going to probably hit another break. I'm going to do one of my songs that I wrote. Let me see. Shall we do the Bacon Zone? Let's do the Bacon Zone. And then when we get back to it, I'm going to hit something, a couple things out of Stay Mad. Maybe if I got a couple things bookmarked. Rules for Radicals is not one of them, but we might get to that. Anyways, stick with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
Good evening. Well, I used to eat bacon, 'cause I like the way it tastes. Now I eat it for jihadis, just to say in your face. I eat bacon, wrapped in bacon, rolled in bacon bits. I don't care if they like it or not. It offends them. It's in their Quran.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
You ain't gonna take my bacon. I'm glad you're offended to your shoes. 'Cause I'd rather eat my bacon.
You see what I'm trying to say, Abdul? I'd rather you got over yourself. Put an end to all this righteous indignation. Have some bacon and enjoy it. We can all get along. And from war enjoy permanent vacation.
Me, I kill you.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
We can create a million new manufacturing jobs in the next 4 years.
Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
If you believe in a country where everyone gets a fair shot and everyone does their fair share and everyone plays by the same rules.
Tell me, mama, are we there?
Yes, our road is longer, but we travel it together.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet? Yeah.
Imagine the breakthroughs that are on the horizon and just beyond it.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
America, I never said this journey would be easy, and I won't promise that now.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Yes, our path is harder, but it leads to a better place.
Mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Not yet.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
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 Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet? There yet?
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
It's literally around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which hunger is vanquished by crops that don't depend on the soil, water, or fertilizer, or pesticides to thrive.
Are we there yet?
They're just around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which nations no longer depend on nuclear weapons for their defense.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet? Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. Are we there yet? Like I said, Dave Graham in with in for G-Ski Rocks, as well as he's out with a family issue, and we're gonna keep rolling along. I got about a little less than a half hour left, and I got some other things that that we can talk about. Like I said, if anybody wants to call in, 516-387-1705, let's give a call. Looks like I have Sue from New Mexico. Finally punched her button. All right. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Dave. I loved your bacon song. I was excited when you played it. I've got a couple of questions for you. You know, the radicals and everything, and this has been funded for a long time. Do you think the funding for all of this that we've seen in education and journalism, the whole shebang, is it being funded by the globalists? And I'd like your thoughts on the removal of Liz Cheney also.
Okay, I mean, I don't know where else the money can come from. You know, it's like if it was market driven, these people wouldn't make enough money to stay in power, because they really don't have a popular ideology. It's really not. So. As far as that goes, I'm convinced, and I just have no way to, you know, nobody has any real way to prove it. But I think you're exactly right. I think it's globalists that want to control the government of the global, you know, they want to control the global government. Those guys that you know, the billionaires, the multi-billionaires. They will buy out a newspaper, right? Didn't Bezos buy the Washington Post or something like that? And now they were going to go out of business. Well, now he just comes in and takes the hit. He has enough money to take the hit to keep him afloat. That way they can keep putting out whatever narrative they're putting out, and the people putting out the narrative will receive a paycheck, because he will just pay it out of his pocket, basically. You know, so he's not the only one doing that. You know, that. So I think you're exactly right. That's the one example that comes to my mind as far as a globalist type guy funding things. But there's so much that is funded that wouldn't make it in the open market. It wouldn't make it in the marketplace of ideas. So as far as that goes, that it has to be. To me, I'm convinced that it's the globalist billionaires that are putting money behind, and they're sneaky about it. You know, they go in different directions and they'll put money behind this group that no one will notice, but that particular group will put some money into this other group, you know, and then finally that money will, some of that money, most of that money will filter over to Antifa or Black Lives Matter or, you know, something like that. And then, you know, then it's come from legitimate sources after it's been laundered through two or three different foundations, you know.
The laundering of the money too. It gives them, you know, an ability to do that. And how else can the head of Black Lives Matter, you know, buy all these houses and everything that they're getting? Are they being paid off to do what they're doing?
No. They have, think of it like, let me preface this with, as I understand it, okay? If you started one of those GoFundMe pages for whatever reason, if your cause reached a lot of people, if you got a lot of traction, if the media was behind it, you'd get a lot of donations, right? Right. So they, depending on how they set up their 501c3, they don't have to. There's something called a pass through. You know, I'll put that in air quotes. A pass through. Like I learned about that when in the Clinton Foundation, their pass through is probably 4 or 5%. The rest of it is slush fund for them. So they have, you know, they want to have a charity that benefits a certain demographic or whatever, a certain group or a certain town or a certain county or a certain country, or, you know, they want to build houses for this. They'll go out and they'll give speeches and they'll get money for their foundation. However, only 3, 4, or 5% of the money that they receive towards that goes towards that. The rest is slush fund for them. That's how they keep money to pay the people. That's how they live. So the same thing happened with Black Lives Matters. Again, as I understand it, they started receiving donations. They started receiving input. Now, some of them may have been big donations from rich, rich, rich people. However, the leaders of the Black Lives Matter, they're the ones that control the money. So at least one of them was actually exposed for purchasing with that money 3 or 4 multi-million dollar estate. So that's what's up with that. That was all donated money, and you know, it's all legit. It really is. It was all legitimately donated to Black Lives Matter. However, Black Lives Matter, they can set their 501c3 up to have an 8% pass through. So the cause that they represent gets like 8% of their donations. The rest is for themselves and overhead. They have people on the payroll that they have to pay. They have, you know, and they probably don't have a whole bunch of people working and getting a paycheck. but the ones that are receiving a pretty good freaking paycheck, you know? So.
Yeah.
All right. So, go ahead.
Well, I mean, just can you comment on what happened to Liz Cheney? Because I consider her a big globalist, and the Democrats or the socialists, whatever you want to call them, they were really upset that she was taken down. Do you see that as something good, you know, that happened?
First of all, absolutely. Yes, that was definitely something good. She is a, you and I think alike, okay, regarding that. I also think that she was one of the globalist people. She's, anybody that hates Trump at this point, the way that she did, you know, especially on the Republican side,
yeah.
you got to figure that they're in a bigger cabal one way or the other. Whether they're related to somebody who's in the cabal and they, you know, they're influenced that way, like her dad, or they you know, in it themselves directly. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Their voting policies and speeches kind of yield the same thing, whether they're indirectly in the cabal directly or related to somebody who's in it. I think it was a good thing because of her influence that was against like Trump. She was no friend and never was a friend of Trump. So you may as well take her out of leadership position. I think it was a good thing that she was removed. I mean, she's still elected by the people, and I think, like I said earlier, you know, they've got the system pegged. They have I call it a formula on how to stay in office. So if you think for one second there's a difference, they're all globalists. Okay, I'm reading what Purple Pill is saying, and I'm not sure I agree with everything he's saying about BLM being a creation of Israel. I think there's something going on. Maybe Purple Pill needs to call in and explain some stuff he's saying. They're saying about Israel and stuff like that. So.
That's an interesting comment.
Yeah, Purple Pill was making some pretty reasonable comments until I started talking about until I played the Bacon Zone song. Let's put it that way. So I don't know if you're you're probably not looking at anything in the chat. So I'm trying to keep up with that. But
yeah, I'd love for him to call in too. That would be an interesting discussion, to say the least.
Yeah, and you know, like I put in the chat, the Bacon Zone song isn't really, it's much less to do with Muslims than it is to do with jihadis who make war, who want to kill everybody that isn't a Muslim. So.
Yeah, and back when you wrote it, I don't know if you want to give a background of when that was, but that wasn't long after 9/11, wasn't it, or it was?
It was probably
about when did you write it?
It was probably about 7 or 8 years after 9/11.
Yeah, but you know it. The whole thing about it was, there was more the jihadis, and it was, you know, kind of recognized. Whereas now, you know, they have such control over the media and everything. If it is a jihadi, they whitewash it, you know, so people don't know exactly, unless you actually read stuff and see who it is and what was said and everything.
All right.
You
so
don't really see it.
Maybe this will draw him out. Let me ask you a question, Sue. Have you heard some of the Democrats refer to Israel as an apartheid state?
Oh, yeah, that was a big, you know, I think at least half of the Democratic Party, and of course you have the squad who is really big time on it.
Right.
They were doing that, and they were very anti-Israel. And I've always said that Joe Biden's presidency is Obama's third term, you know, and he
stolen
definitely
third term.
Hates
stolen
issues.
Third term. Stolen,
stolen
third
yes.
term.
Yeah,
okay.
I agree.
So let me try this. Let's take our glasses off, just like Clark Kent, right? We'll take our glasses off, and let me ask you these questions, okay? If Israel is an apartheid state, do Muslims live in Israel?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Perfect
side
answer.
By side
now,
with them, yeah.
And now, here's the next question. Do Muslims – I got like five questions, so bear with me, okay? All right.
Okay.
So Muslims live in Israel. Okay. Do Muslims have rights in Israel? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Do Muslims even have representation in the Knesset?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So there's three questions that have laid a foundation. Now, can you answer what happened to Jews and Christians in Syria?
Oh, they were killed, and they're still being killed. You know,
what
slaughtered
happened,
and murdered.
What happened to – do they have rights?
No.
Okay. What is the punishment for killing Jews and Christians?
Nothing.
Right. So which of the two, I mean, just that's just one example. I mean, let's go to, you know, some of the other Muslim-controlled countries.
What's the, Nigeria, go to Africa, all over.
I'm being accused of a fraudulent line of questioning. I asked three questions, Purple Pill. I asked three questions. Do Muslims
call
live?
In.
Yeah, you better call in, okay? Fortunately, I was educated in Austria and Switzerland. Therefore, may not be as poorly educated or brainwashed as most Americans. He spells it with a K. That is so fraudulent line of questioning that you are so full of BS. I dare you to call in. I dare you to call in. Because I asked three questions, one of which was, do Muslims live in Israel? Yes. Two, do they have rights in Israel? Yes. Three, do they have representation in Israel? Yes. Does any of those conditions exist for Jews and Christians in a Muslim-controlled area? No. So which one is the apartheid state? Oh, man, he got me going now. But he won't call in.
Ask him to define apartheid. I'd really like to see what he thinks an apartheid state is, if he
knows. That's a good question. Purple Pill, type this into the chat since you don't want to call in. Type this into the chat. What is your definition of an apartheid state? I'll wait. We'll wait. We'll all wait. Well, I'll have to wait because I don't even know if he's going to read. He can choose not to respond, but as soon as I played that Bacon Zone song, he started going, woo-hoo, even though I explained it and described it. So I'm a poorly educated sheeple. That's what I am, apparently. Israel is much worse than apartheid. You don't even know what the word means. That's what he just wrote. Israel is much worse than apartheid, exclamation point.
Then why doesn't he tell us what apartheid means?
That was the question. What does that mean?
If he's so educated, he should have that in there.
All right. Israel is much worse than apartheid. Israel is Bolshevik Zionist. What the hell does that mean? What the hell does that mean? Keep going. Okay? Keep going. Keep going. You can do it. Type faster. Let's go. I'm running out of time. I got 7 minutes left. Let's go. We got to resolve this. Like I have never researched any of this, right? You know, like I don't know what I'm talking about. I am, what am I? I'm a poorly educated sheeple. All right, so doch ich weiß schon. I have no idea what that means. That sounds German. All right, good. You know what? You know what? Purple pill, get out. Get out. I didn't realize you were going to pollute my chat room. Get out. I'm obviously poorly educated in Zionist. Yeah, got it. Got it. I'm obviously poorly educated in Zionist. I got it. Get out. You're a coward. Coward. I have a phone number.
Yep.
You're a coward. I have a phone number. You're a coward. I'm going to say it one more time. I'm an obvious hill. Wait. I am obviously
still in there?
Yeah, I am obviously an Israeli operative.
Oh, geez.
Obviously, I eat Mossad. Okay, Purple Pill, I'm sorry to say, but you're embarrassing yourself with the stuff you're putting up in the chat room. Thank you, Bigfoot. Zionist and proud of it, he writes. Bigfoot, thank you.
Good for him.
All right, Bigfoot. Come on, I still have 8 minutes. I'm waiting for the call. Are you on my call? Am I on my switchboard yet? No. Americans are so poorly and helplessly educated. Yeah. And what is it? Where is he from? Switzerland? What did he say? Austria? Austrians are morons, I guess, is my addition. Morons. Cowards. That's what they are. Cowards. I'm a Marxist Bolshevik. You don't know what Zionist means. You said that equals fascist or Bolshevik.
Yeah,
can hear
I'd
you.
Like to know the definition of a Bolshevik. So yeah. He obviously has no idea.
I don't think so. Or what a fascist is. Because now
right.
If I'm a Zionist and I'm a Mossad, then I'm a fascist. Hmm. Probably think that Israel shouldn't defend themselves. See how poorly educated you are. You put your foot in your mouth due to ignorance. Dude, that's what you've just done.
Okay. He said you put your foot in your mouth?
Yeah. Yep. Zionist equals communist. And you're just way, way off. You don't know what communist means. You don't know what Soviet means. You don't know what fascist means. You don't know what Marxist even means. I was going to get into it this half hour, but you set me off after you heard the Bacon Zone song. I think for myself, okay, and you can say whatever you want, but it's pretty much, I don't know, time for you to go. Get out. Get out. I don't know what Doch ich weiß schon means.
He obviously doesn't want you to know either.
Yeah.
If he's so educated, why doesn't he put it to where we can understand it?
Oh, wow. The reason we don't understand it is because we're so uneducated. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh.
I mean, you should have been able to figure that out.
You know, it just, the fact that he won't call in.
I know, he started trolling as soon as I played the since I played the Bacon Zone song. I think I'm going to play the Bacon Zone song again, and maybe I'll leave.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah, I got time. All right. I got 4 minutes left, so remember there are Americans and then there are Americans, but all Americans are not American. He's spelling some of them with a K and some of them with a C. You're very clever. I don't think you're even American.
It was a great show, Dave. Thank you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I do. I'm going to – we'll end up taking it out of here with the Bacon Zone song. So he can off Wieden, Dolphin, Deeden, owned, and I'm a Nazi. Sue, I want to thank you very much for doing all the work that you did. You're amazing as always. And I retweeted some of your tweets that you had. So, I definitely appreciate you. I made it through the whole show and then I played the Bacon Zone song. Wow. So Purple Pill really got set off by that one. Okay, I can do this too. I think Purple Pill is a jihadi, and he hates Israel. That's he's saying Hitler was a Zionist. I don't get that. Do you?
Hitler was a Zionist.
Yeah,
that's why he murdered,
right,
you know, all of the Jews.
And Jewish, like you. Purple Pill, you know what? You can screw off. How's that? I'm glad. You had decent comments until I played the Bacon Zone song, but you didn't get that. So you can hit it. Susie, thanks very much for calling in and helping me get through this last half hour. I appreciate it.
I love the show. Okay,
I'm
bye.
Head out with the Bacon Zone song. Take it easy. See ya.
Good evening.
Well, I used to eat bacon, 'cause I like the way it tastes. Now I eat it for jihadis, just to say
in your face.
Bacon, rolled in bacon,
bacon.
And I used to kick on Ramadan. And I don't care if they like it or not. It offends them. It's in their Quran.
Yeah.
That's right. You ain't gonna take my bacon. It's you. I eat bacon wrapped in bacon, 'cause I like it. It's a bonus that it offends you. My bacon into little
Can't you see what I'm trying to say, Abdul? I do.
Brother, you got over yourself. Put an end to all this righteous indignation. Have some bacon and enjoy it. We can all get along. And from war enjoy permanent vacation.
Who's there?
Me. I kill you.